Good Thursday morning, Yuma. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Gary Scott, bringing you today's edition of the Yuma Sun Daily. Some of the articles we'll be going over include P&Z approves housing complex for farm workers, $500,000 grant added to drainage project in Orange Grove, Rancho Mesa Verde. Judge originally from Yuma among five finalists for Arizona Supreme Court. 3-day Foothills Parade of Lights returns this weekend. Nutcracker Ballet, a Christmas tradition, returns Friday. Chicanos por la Casa to host free holiday celebration Saturday. We'll have the weekend weather forecast, editorials, opinions, and if time permits, some things to do over the upcoming weekend. And now, our first article. P&Z approves housing complex for farm workers by Josh Bootson. The Yuma Planning and Zoning Commission approved a conditional use permit to allow the construction of a new large housing complex for farm workers on a property located at the southwest corner of Avenue 6E and East 30th Street. A villa construction on behalf of Tanamura and Antle CA General Partnership made the request to allow 12 two-story apartment-style buildings with 183 two-bedroom, two-bath dwellings units covering two adjoining properties on 8.14 total acres. Each apartment unit would house up to 8 individuals for a total capacity of 1,464 residents. The housing project will only be occupied by agricultural employees during Yuma's harvest season from September to February. Construction of the 12 buildings and surrounding facilities is expected to last about 8 months from the issuance of permits. Most of the properties surrounding this site are vacant, aside from the railroad across 30th Street to the north and the Cactus Tree RV and Mobile Home Park along half of the southern border. Residents of Cactus Tree were invited to a neighborhood meeting on November 6th, where they voiced multiple concerns. A common concern had to do with that would come from 1,464 new tenants. As it currently sits between Canal B to the south and the Union Pacific Railroad to the north, the only way to access Cactus Tree is by traveling north on South Avenue 6E from East 32nd Street. From there, drivers can turn west on 30th Street before reaching the railroad, then turn south on the FedEx Way to access the RV park. The path traverses three sides of the proposed housing complex, which will include three access gates that RV park residents will have to pass by. A semi-paved utility easement exists from Avenue 6E to FedEx Way along the north border of the RV park, but that sits on the TNA land and will be included within the area of the new complex. In response to the traffic concerns during the commission meeting on December 9th, TNA representatives assured RV park residents that seasonal employees do not typically own personal vehicles. The employees will be bused to agricultural fields for their daily work, leaving sporadically between 2 to 5 a.m. and returning home between noon to 4 p.m. Buses will also be provided to transport employees to nearby shopping, recreation, and religious activities on weekday evenings and weekends. Multiple concerns were raised about the buses as well. The current plan is for the buses to access the site by the main gate on 30th Street in the middle of the north border of the property. They would then fork to the east and west along the southern border, load and unload employees, and exit the property through side gates. Desdemonia Gilbert, manager of Cactus Tree, mentioned that there are 15 trailers along the northern property line, which will be less than 60 feet away from where the buses are proposed to load and unload. With bedrooms at the back of trailers and many elderly residents, Gilbert proposed that the bus pickup location be moved to the north side of TNA's property, rather than causing noise from 2 to 5 a.m. so close to her elderly residents. Another issue Gilbert raised had to do with residents feeling safe. We've been here for like 60 to 70 years, and we've been all alone, so people are used to it. An environment where we're safe, Gilbert said. A lot of people are feeling threatened for their safety, and I've already had at least half a dozen people tell me they're willing to move out. In response to this, Robert Blevins, the city's principal planner, shared that all individuals housed at the project site will be employed by the owner of their labor contractors, and they are required to clear a background check. An on-site manager will also be charged with monitoring and managing the facility. The proposed project will install perimeter fencing and vehicle gates. All gates will be automated and self-closing, Blevins said. The extensive video surveillance system will be installed throughout the facility. It will monitor all vehicles and pedestrian traffic. License plate readers are installed at each vehicle entrance to track incoming and outgoing vehicles. Yuma's zoning code lists general requirements for companies housing and also needs to be met for this project to move forward, including recreation and laundry facilities. According to the applicant, Facilities include 4 recreational rooms, 8 pergola shade picnic table structures, open space, and 2 sports recreation courts and walkways around the complex. One last issue brought by Gilbert was that the 15 trailers against the northern border of the RV park will now be closed in. In the past, she utilized the semi-paved easement to install and remove trailers from that row, but now the trailers will have to be disassembled and it will be impossible to maneuver a new one in its place. The Planning and Zoning Commission voted 5-0 to approve the request for the conditional use permit. $500,000 grant added to drainage project in Orange Grove, Rancho Mesa Verde by Cesar Noyoy from Bajo El Sol. The Yuma County Board of Supervisors approved the acceptance and management of a $500,000 grant from the North American Development Bank for a drainage project in the Orange Grove and Rancho Mesa Verde areas. The item was part of the supervisors' December 2nd regular session consent agenda. The grant from NAD Bank's Project Development Assistance Program and the Environmental Protection Agency will be used to help design the project, which will provide drainage services to 315 homes in the area near Somerton, where septic tanks are currently used. This is additional funding for the project, and it will help us significantly because the design won't have to be paid from the funds we already have, which can now go directly to the project, said Martin Porches, chair of the Board of Supervisors. The District 1 supervisor, whose district includes the Orange Grove and Rancho Mesa Verde subdivisions, commonly referred to as La Mesa, added that the next step will involve bidding for companies interested in designing the project. The phase is expected to take 6 to 8 months, with the goal of starting construction in the fall of 2025. In 2014, the county and the Somerton City Council collaborated to introduce potable water service to the area, connecting it to the municipal network. For the drainage service, the plan is also to connect it to Somerton's municipal network. The construction of the drainage system will be funded with $21.6 million announced by the U.S. Department of Agriculture for the project in October. Porches emphasized that the NAD Bank grant will also help ensure that available funds are sufficient to cover potential cost increases during the construction phase. Judge originally from Yuma among 5 finalists for Arizona Supreme Court. By Howard Fisher from Capital Media Services. A special panel has given Governor Katie Hobbs 5 choices, including a judge originally from Yuma, from which she has to pick the next justice of the Arizona Supreme Court. The list approved late Monday by the Commission on Appellate Court Appointments includes 3 Democrats, like the governor, and 2 political independents. That particular mix is not unusual. In fact, it's mandated by the Arizona Constitution, which requires the commission to provide a politically diverse list. More to the point, no more than 60% can be from the same party. So for the commission to send Hobbs 3 Democrats from which to choose, it also had to give her names of the 2 independents. While Hobbs is free to choose who she wants, the commission clearly has a favorite, Maria Elena Cruz, currently a judge on the State Court of Appeals. The Yuma Democrat previously has served as judge for the Cocopah Indian Tribe and Yuma County Superior Court. She was the only one of the applicants who gained unanimous support of the 15 commissioners who voted. Chief Justice Ann Scott Timmer, who chairs the panel, chose to abstain in all cases. While Hobbs is legally required from the list of nominees, nothing requires her to consider the level of support from the panel. But Cruz also brings something that the governor could find significant. She identifies as a Black Latina, bringing some additional diversity to the state's high court. Women have been on the court for decades, but there were no Hispanics on the court until 2016, when then-Governor Doug Ducey named John Lopez to the court. There have never, however, been any African Americans. Nicole Davis, who is deputy director of the Department of Economic Security and the agency's general counsel, picked up 13 votes. Prior to that, Davis, a political independent who is a Black female, picked up 13 votes. Prior to working at DES, she was also a deputy counsel for the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, the state's Medicaid program. And among her other professional experiences, is serving as deputy general counsel to Janet Napolitano when she was governor. Also on the list is Andrew Jacobs, who, like Cruz, is a Democrat, a white male. Most of his experience before joining the court was in private practice at a Phoenix law firm. He got 12 votes. Picking up 14 votes was Regina Nassen, principal assistant attorney for the city of Tucson. Initially a political independent, she registered as a Democrat for 14 years before becoming an independent again in 2014. A white female, she previously worked with the Pima County Attorney's Office. Nassen has also experience in private practice. The list is filled out with Alexander Samuels, an assistant state attorney general who is a Democrat. Samuels, a white male, previously worked as an assistant U.S. attorney. Hobbs has 60 days to make her pick to replace retiring Justice Robert Brutinel, a Republican, and her choice is final. This is a different process than at the federal level, where the president gets to choose anyone he wants, with the only barrier being getting Senate confirmation. Here, with the governor constrained to choose from the list of nominees, there is no requirement for Senate confirmation. Whoever Hobbs chooses will be the first pick by a Democratic governor in nearly two decades. That was for Scott Bayles, who served until 2019. Everyone now on the court was named either by Jan Brewer or Ducey, both of whom are Republicans, and each chose only Republicans, with the exception of Ducey's pick of Clint Bowlett, who was registered as a political independent when named. Three-day Foothills Parade of Lights returns this weekend by Nick Fenley. Continuing a long-standing tradition, the three-day Foothill Parade of Lights will make its return this upcoming weekend. Kicking off at 6 p.m. sharp on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings, the event brings Foothill residents together to commemorate Christmas time with a festive light show. The event initially began in the mid-1980s as a way to give people in the Foothills a holiday event of their own, and has morphed into an annual tradition that is still going strong. Rudy Wallace, who took over as the organizer around 2016, shared some of the behind-the-scenes work that goes into the three-day event. In November, a meeting is held for organizers to review routes and rules. This year, due to political climate, they opted to request that no flags, banners, or signs be included, except those of a religious nature. Ahead of the event, raffle tickets were sold to help offset expenses, with any extra funds being donated to the Yuma Community Food Bank. Non-perishables also are accepted at boxes situated in Foothills-based RV parks, which are collected by Joe and Carla Waterford. The people out here in the Foothills look forward to this. It's one of the big events of the year, and as long as we have people that turn out, we're going to keep doing it, Wallace told the Yuma Sun. Matt Engel will serve as the MC during the event, and he will also lead the mandatory driver meetings ahead of each night of the parade. On all three nights, the Foothill Parade of Lights will begin in the intersection of 46th Street and Foothills Boulevard. Friday is the largest night of the event, and participants will traverse a different route every evening. Deputies will be on site as well. Organizers have been gearing up for the parade by driving down the various routes ahead of time. During the second week of January, a post-parade meeting is held for organizers to conduct an after-action review, which helps them plan for the next event, keeping the tradition alive. You are listening to the Yuma Sun Daily with Gary Scott on Sun Sounds of Arizona. For those of you going out to the parade, we're going to have great weather over the upcoming weekend. Today, a high of 72 degrees. Tomorrow, 69 with a low of 43. On Saturday, partly cloudy with a high of 70 and a low of 40. Back to sunny skies on Sunday with a high of 71 and a low of 42. Nutcracker Ballet, a Christmas tradition, returns Friday by Joyce Lobeck. The Nutcracker Ballet, an enduring Christmas season tradition for Yuma audiences, once again will be brought to the stage by Arizona Classical Ballet. The ballet will be presented at 5:30 p.m. Friday, December 13th, at the historic Yuma Theater, located at 254 South Main Street. Cost is $20 per person. Tickets may be purchased in advance at the Yuma Arts Center or online at the Yuma Arts Center website. They also will be sold at the door. This year's production, while bringing the beloved traditional scenes to life again, also be fresh through new costumes, new choreography, and a lineup of talented students, guest artists, and returning alumni, said artistic director Erica Farrar Bowen. Set to music by famous Russian composer Tchaikovsky, the ballet begins on Christmas Eve in the home of the Strawbaum family as they entertain guests. Magician and toy maker Herr Drosselmeyer arrives and presents young Clara with a nutcracker. After the festivities end and everyone else retires for the night, Clara embarks on a magical journey with her nutcracker. When Clara saves him from a battle with the Mouse King, the nutcracker is transformed into a prince and leads Clara to the beautiful land of the sweets. There, the Sugar Plum Fairy, after hearing how Clara rescued the nutcracker prince, throws a grand celebration in her honor. Chocolate from Spain, coffee from Arabia, tea from China, candy canes from Russia, all considered to be exotic in the Victorian era, dance for their amusement. Mother Ginger, played by retired master Gunnery Sergeant Derek Fry, has her children, the Polichinelles, emerge from under the enormous skirt to dance. A string of beautiful flowers performs a waltz. To conclude the night, the Sugar Plum Fairy and the Cavalier then dance. For an extra treat for the audience and to add a different element, Farrar Bowen also includes the dance of English Toffee, which is rarely performed. During her years dancing as a child and professionally, she only knew of one company that includes a score to the English Toffee dance. A few years ago, I remembered it had been taken out, and most people don't realize it's part of the Nutcracker, she said. I decided it was time to put it back in. Thanks to a grant from the Arizona Community Foundation, the ballet will feature two guest artists from the Ballet Center Studio in San Diego. One of them, Barrett Bartolome, has been a frequent guest dancer with Arizona Classical Ballet. He is returning to dance the role of the Sugar Plum Fairy's Cavalier. Kenley Fleming will dance as the Snow King. A third guest artist is Yuma area native Brian Golding, who danced with Arizona Classical Ballet for about 10 years. He has returned to Yuma, where he is pursuing a degree in electrical engineering and will appear in the Nutcracker in several roles. A parent, the Mouse King, a Spanish chocolate, and Russian candy cane. Arizona Classical Ballet will have about 45 students performing the Nutcracker from 4 and 5-year-old lambs to adults, among them alumni returning to the stage and other adults who are taking on guest roles. Three major roles were being danced by advanced students: Monica Arvallo as the Sugar Plum Fairy, Samantha Case as the lead Rose Fairy, and Maddie Fry as the Snow Queen. Marley Elge plays Clara. Special guests in the audience will be about 20 Special Olympians who will be able to enjoy the ballet at no cost to them, thanks to a couple of sponsors. I try to find a group each year I feel would benefit from the experience, said Farrar Bowen. In addition to enabling Farrar Bowen to bring in guest artists for the ballet, a special performance will be held on Thursday, December 12th, when 650 students from several schools will be brought to the theater. Farrar Bowen noted that the city has donated use of the theater for this special event. It will include a ballet, an appearance by Santa and Mrs. Claus, and a sing-along of Christmas carols. And it's free to all children because of the grant. So the children will get to experience a lot of the ballet, guest artists, singing, and Santa, said Farrar Bowen. It's a lot of fun. It's great for school children. I'm really excited. Last year, every seat was covered and I could hear children cheering. Chicanos por la Casa to hold free holiday celebration Saturday, by Scott Giebel. Chicanos por la Casa, a nonprofit that advocates for underserved individuals and communities, will host the annual Angeles del Barrio event in Yuma on Saturday, December 14th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. or until supplies are gone. CPLC will offer free toys, games, stockings, and photos with Santa. Angeles del Barrio has been a tradition for 56 years, enjoyed to children throughout the community. Food City will host this event at 2600 South 16th Street. Kathy Keppel, Director of Events and Special Projects, explained why this event is important for the community. Many of the children we reach at our Angeles del Barrio event will not otherwise be able to celebrate the holidays. Some would have thought Santa forgot about them, or worse, that they don't deserve a Christmas present, she said. She also spoke about the partnership they have with Food City and how much impact that has. Food City is the presenting sponsor of our holiday events in Yuma, Phoenix, and Tucson. They provide us with the space to hand out toys and stockings. We've had a long-standing partnership with Food City, and we're partners in our vision of a more equitable future for all, Keppel added. Entry to Angeles del Barrio is free and open to the public. And now a guest editorial from the Washington Post. Biden's pardon of son mars final chapter of career. President-elect Donald Trump is selecting radical MAGA loyalists for top national security positions, signaling his intention to upend the professionalism and independence of institutions that wield some of the federal government's most awesome powers. Political opponents, journalists, and others could be victims, and President Joe Biden just gave him cover. To be clear, Mr. Biden had an unquestionable legal right to pardon his son Hunter. But in so doing, he maligned the Justice Department and invited Mr. Trump to draw equivalence between the Hunter Biden pardon and any future moves. Mr. Trump might take against the impartial administration of justice. He risks deepening many Americans' suspicion that the justice system is two-tiered, justifying Mr. Trump's drive to reshape it, or, because turnabout is fair play, to use it to benefit his own side. Mr. Biden, of course, argues that pardoning his son strikes a blow for fairness in law enforcement. his statement on the pardon, in which he uses the word, "I believe in the justice system," but claims that no reasonable person could reach any other conclusion that Hunter was singled out only because he is my son. Yet such considerations were apparently not so compelling when he pledged previously not to pardon Hunter. And his son clearly broke the law. A federal jury of Hunter Biden's peers found him guilty of 3 firearm-related felonies in Delaware. Hunter also pleaded guilty to tax evasion charges that carry a penalty of up to 17 years in prison. The gun charges, essentially that the younger Mr. Biden lied on a purchase application form when he denied using drugs, is particularly hard to ignore. Such laws, however, rarely are enforced, are on the books to help keep firearms out of the hands of those who might pose a danger to themselves or others. By implication, Mr. Biden casually impugns investigations at the IRS and the FBI, career prosecutors Attorney General Merrick Garland, and a federal judge in Delaware. Before Mr. Garland became Attorney General, Mr. Biden himself chose to keep David C. Weiss as U.S. Attorney for Delaware as not to interfere with Mr. Weiss's ongoing investigation of the president's son. In his statement, Mr. Biden complains that a plea deal fell apart in court last summer. In fact, the judge did her job by questioning its irregular structure, highly favorable to Hunter Biden, and the degree to which the defendant believed it would immunize him from future prosecution for unrelated crimes. The president's sweeping pardon covered any and all federal crimes his son might have committed over the past 10 years, including those that have not been charged, without going through the traditional Justice Department process. This covers potential illegal behavior by Hunter Biden going back to 2014, 6 years before Biden became president. Mr. Biden rushed out this pardon to short-circuit the sentencing process in both cases in the coming weeks. This averts a meaningful part of the accountability process in which judges would have decided whether Hunter Biden deserved to serve time in prison. Justice Department guidelines say a pardon shouldn't be issued until 5 years after a sentence is served. That was the case when Bill Clinton pardoned Roger Clinton after the president's brother had served time for cocaine trafficking. Yet Mr. Trump egregiously misused the pardon power during his first term, granting clemency to Stephen K. Bannon, Roger Stone, Michael Flynn, and Charles Kushner, his son-in-law's father, whom he tapped to be ambassador to France. These sent the message that Mr. Trump will get his cronies off the hook at the risk of encouraging further unlawful behavior. Yet no matter the distinctions that one can draw between these cases and Hunter Biden's, the president and the Democrats are the ones trying to defend the system. They damage their worthy cause if they are going to be seen as exploiting it for their own gain. Any Democrat who refused this week to condemn Mr. Biden's pardon will have less credibility to criticize Mr. Trump, his meddling at the Justice Department, and his choices for key positions in that agency. No one should be surprised if Mr. Trump invokes the Hunter Biden pardon to justify clemency for many more of his allies, potentially including January 6th insurrectionists. With this one intemperate, selfish act, the president has undermined, in hindsight, the lofty rationales he offered for seeking the presidency 4 years ago and indelibly marred the final chapter of his political career. Now, first take from Josh Bootson. A month for sci-fi fantasy. Could this be the most eventful month ever for sci-fi fantasy genre? In the movie world, Wicked just smashed the domestic box office record for a movie musical adaptation, and it doesn't look to be slowing down. Additionally, Lord of the Rings fans are salivating at the upcoming release of the animated War of the Rohirrim movie on December 13th. The first LOTR movie since The Hobbit trilogy came out a decade ago. I can't wait to see Peter Jackson's new masterpiece. I'm sure HBO subscribers are well aware of the Dune Prophecy series currently being released in 6 one-hour episodes, and the new Star Wars show, Skeleton Crew, is rolling out through December. Shifting from the scene to the page, the latest edition of Brandon Sanderson's award-winning Stormlight Archive series, released on December 6th, which I can't wait to get my hands on. This genre has something for everybody, and it's firing on all cylinders. And finally, for today's broadcast, a few events you may want to consider over the upcoming weekend. There's the Yuma Artisans and Crafters Christmas Bazaar, which will be held Friday the 13th and Saturday the 14th at the Yuma County Fairgrounds, located at 2520 East 32nd Street. This is our 50th year doing events in Yuma, Arizona. There will be over 90 crafters and artists selling and displaying their wares, bakers, woodworkers, jewelers, sewn items, resin, fine artists, and more. Come and enjoy the fun. This is promoted by Yuma Artisans and Crafters. The event starts on Friday the 13th at 9 a.m. and on Sunday the 14th at 3 p.m. Also on Friday, there's the Mountain Shadows Fire Arts Association Fine Arts Show from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Yuma County Fairgrounds, 2520 East 32nd Street, featuring stunning works from local artists. Whether you're looking for original fine art, limited edition prints, original pottery, or unique decorations, you'll find it here. Support local human artists and pick up one-of-a-kind gifts, free entry, and family-friendly. Another event to consider on Friday the 13th, Under a Starry Sky, a dramatic Christmas musical, will be held at 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., 3261 South Avenue 6E. This is the First Christian Church Christmas musical. For more information, contact 928-726-5616. And on Saturday the 14th, from 4 to 5 p.m., there's the 45th Annual Cindy Klein Memorial Handbell Choir Christmas Concert, located at the Trinity United Methodist Church, 3030 South 8th Avenue. Enjoy the music of the handbells as they share favorite Christmas songs. An annual tradition for 45 years, the Cindy Klein Memorial Handbell Choir shares their Christmas favorites as they ring in the holidays. This is promoted by Pastor Bob Klein, and you can reach him at 928-344-3013 for more information. That's all the time we have for today's broadcast. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Gary Scott. Thanks for tuning in to today's Yuma Sun Daily. If you missed any part of this program, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and listen to it on demand under broadcast info and audio. You can also take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. The Wall Street Journal is next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.